Hey guys, this is And the Writer Is with Ross Golan. I've written with hundreds of writers and artists over the years, and my favorite part of each session is the first hour when we catch up about life and the industry, politics, composition, whatever. If you ask me, songwriters are some of the most worldly and intelligent people I've ever come across. So this is a journey of learning why people write songs, how people write songs, and most importantly, who the people are who write the songs. I'm co-producing this with my friend Joe London, who's nominated for a Grammy this year. He records every interview and makes sure we sound like angels. So if you like what you hear, please rate us on iTunes or whatever your preferred podcast listening site is.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
In this episode, we meet with Jacob Casher, a.k.a. J. Cash. I'm not sure we'll ever have an interview with someone more prolific. He's a hit writer and a producer in the true sense. He compiles teams of music makers, and out comes chart-topping songs. Right now, he has Maroon 5's Don't Wanna Know, which just went number one, Bebe Rexha's I Got You, which was the most added song at radio, and Zara Larsson's So Good, which was announced this week. Pretty impressive for a white Virginia rapper who used to mow lawns. Let me set the scene for you. We recorded this at the Great Conway Studio, which is the holy grail of recording locations. It's secluded and private, and yet some of the world's biggest rock stars are there, sharing the same kitchen as you. Some characters in this story we refer to by their first name. They are Kevin Rudolph, the artist who did Let It Rock. He signed Jay to his first co-publishing deal. Dr. Luke, one of the greatest producers in the past 15 years, who still co-publishes Jay. Gabe Saporta, who is the frontman of Cobra Starship, the band that recorded Good Girls Go Bad. Mike Caron, head of A&R for Warner Records and founder of APG. Phil, an up-and-coming producer signed to Jay. Benny Blanco, who we interviewed last week. Max Martin, greatest writer of our generation. Ammo, an A-list producer with whom Jay wrote Sugar. And Johan Carlson, best instrumentalist producer in the game. Again, if you like what you hear, please rate us on iTunes or whatever your preferred podcast listening site is. And check us out on Spotify. We have a playlist for this episode so you can hear some of this writer's biggest hits. Without further ado, here is And the Writer Is. Welcome to And the Writer Is. I am your host, Ross Golan. Today's guest, in his words, doesn't play an instrument or sing well. He's kind of tone deaf. He doesn't own a MacBook Pro. He's uneducated and can't spell for shit. He believes that if you have to look at your phone or a piece of paper to remember the lyrics, they probably suck. And yet, this man has written multiple number one songs in multiple formats. But let me tell you in my words that I've never worked with another writer who can take any concept, no matter the level of sophistication, and put it into words we all understand. He didn't go to college, but he's smarter than most of us. And the writer is, from Virginia Beach, he's a beast, and one of my closest collaborators, my friend Jacob Casher, a.k.a. J. Cash.
Hey.
Since we did this last time, you did five or six songs on the Meghan Trainor album, including No, which I saw on a bunch of, like, end-of-the-year lists as, like, best, you know, one of those, like, best top 100 songs. Like, it's been listed all over the place, so that was big. You had the 1D single, Perfect. You had the Charlie Puth Selena single, which in a weird sort of way is like low-key, like my favorite song from last year.
Thank
I told you.
You
that, though. Like, that's like one of those songs where I wish I wrote it.
Yeah.
You know?
I really love that song.
Yeah. Maroon 5, you kind of get to reshape the new phase for them, and
totally.
You're executive producing it.
This is true.
Which is in itself an accomplishment, let alone like the actual seeing the success of the songs. And it's cool to see, like, I, you know, we're at Conway Studio right now, and the fact that we used to come to this studio, both of us, working with different people, but it wasn't like you call the call box now and you're like, I'm here to see J-Cash. You know, right. Like, that's sick. Yeah. You know, like, it's moved from being like, oh, yeah, we're young writers to,
yeah.
I mean, running the show is pretty crazy.
Yeah, I mean, this studio is so significant for me and my career because when I first moved out here, this was one of the first studios I worked in, and it's my favorite studio on earth. And you walk in here and the magnitude of people, there's only three rooms and it's always just filled with the biggest, best people. And, you know, for years I was just so lucky to just be here on other people's merit. And now that, like, I get to, you know, lock down one or two or sometimes even three of these rooms and have some of the biggest clients in the music business and all the best songwriters and producers kind of, you know, rally here and get to in some ways be like a coordinator and an overseer and a collaborator.
Does that add pressure for you?
No, it actually makes me feel better because I used to feel pressure because I used to be like, oh my God, like how much does a studio cost a day? Like if I don't write something great, you know, like I remember back in the day, somebody from a label put me here for a week to do something for their artist and there was like an unlimited food budget and me and one of my producer friends just got fucked up here for a whole week.
Right.
We just ordered Nobu every day and like we ordered like Jordans and hoodies on the food budget and we didn't get anything done. You know, it was like a total wash and, you know, and I got a lot of, you know, I caught a lot of flack for that. And then that was like, that was when I was...
How early on was that?
It was really early on. I mean, it was in the beginning and...
when was the beginning?
I mean, this had to be 2009 or 10, you know?
You've lived out here that long?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe 11. I'm not great with timelines. I've been sober for 3.5 years, so anything before that is just a fucking... a cloud. But yeah, so I'm going to be terrible with timelines, so don't ever quote me.
How much does sobriety change like your writing process?
It changed everything. I mean, you know, I had a lot of hits when I was fucked up or a moderate amount, and now I feel like my writing style, my ability to see things through, the amount of ideas I have, like I could never believe how much better I am now. My career is just, and my life has exponentially risen and is still rising. And I know it plays a big part of it. Cause I mean, I miss weed every day. It was the first thing I ever loved besides my parents. You know, like I loved weed since I was a little kid, obsessing in love with it. You know,
do you still think about it?
Totally. Yeah.
Sort of like an ex-girlfriend kind of situation.
Yeah. I just don't think there's like a cure for sobriety. I think it's just like, or sorry, a cure for being an addict. And I didn't quit. I didn't get sober because I was addicted to weed. I got sober because I was addicted to weed and pills. And I was addicted to anything that got me fucked up, you know, minus putting a needle in my arm or, you know, smoking rocks.
Right.
You know? But yeah.
And did the music industry, like, do you think that added to...
Yeah, I think it did because, you know, I come from like a really great family who always worked hard and I always had everything I needed. Like I'm not, you know, claiming that that I grew up like super poor or anything, but I definitely didn't grow up rich.
Dad owned
Well, he owns like a mom and pop's radio station now that does good. My dad was always in the music business. He managed like the big urban station where I'm from. That's how I got like into music. And you know, my mom was a teacher and they did fine, but you know, you wake up one day with an enormous check for hundreds of thousands of dollars and you've probably never had more than like $1,200 to your name at once. I mean, you know, you get a little rowdy, you know.
Was that from like the what's your first big check from?
It was from Good Girls Go Bad by Cobra Starship.
Oh, so it wasn't like, is that after the, like, Let It Rock and all the Kevin Rudolph
songs? Yeah, but I don't...
Because that's how you got in.
Well, I had a bunch of, you know, it's funny, if I think...
I guess we should give, like, some background, because obviously I know...
Totally.
...know you well, but you grew up in Virginia Beach. I know you kind of, like, you know, fast forward through a lot of childhood, you end up in Miami.
Yeah.
And as a rapper.
A failed rapper at this point.
You were already like marked yourself as failed by the time you moved to Miami.
Yeah, terrible failed white rapper.
When were you a successful? Like, when in your head were you like, oh, was it like high school that you're like, I'm a fucking sick rapper?
Oh yeah, yeah, totally. I was like, you couldn't tell me I wasn't Jay-Z.
Right.
You know.
Did everyone else in high school think of you as Jay-Z? Because you're a good rapper.
Everybody was on my dick. I was the man. You know.
Yeah.
I used to be like. I think I've always been good with words. Listening back to my old rap stuff is brutal. Like, I used to be really embarrassed about it. Now I just think it's funny. But, you know, the thing about rap for me was it was like an outlet, you know, the only musical outlet I really had. I love rap music still to this day, and I did back then. But it was the only thing I could actually do with my voice, you know, because I'm such a shitty singer. But I actually really liked rap.
Were there melodies? Because I think you're a really good melody writer. You just can't sing them well.
Yeah, but like, you're a good melody. Them.
You know, like, were you, when you were doing those raps in high school and stuff, are you singing hooks?
I mean, not at the beginning. I mean, as I got a little bit older, like, a little bit further along, I was kind of like onto this, like, because, you know, I really grew up like loving pop punk and rock and like 90s alternative music. Yeah. So it was so many things. But yeah, I was kind of doing this, like, emo kind of thing at one point too that wasn't registering to anyone because they just wanted to hear me do that like hard shit. Right. And the funny thing is I was like completely talking out of my ass when I was rapping. I was, you know, I was talking about like selling drugs and like carrying guns. And because the thing was, it wasn't like I was trying to, you know, in hindsight, which is always 2020, I wasn't trying to lie to make people think that I was something I wasn't. I wanted to make the shit that I liked.
Right.
But I just didn't sound like
authentic.
And vocally, like, my voice didn't come out of speakers sounding like Jadakiss or Jay-Z or like any of my favorite rappers. Like, I just sounded like me.
Yeah.
You know, which is pretty close to what I sound like right now, except I used to kind of like twist my, you know,
Fred Durst.
It was like a mix between like a terrible Fred Durst and like a kind of a Jay-Z impression, and like, I don't know what the fuck I was thinking. I can't do it again.
One of my favorite things you did in the last like month was when we were talking about Little Red Corvette.
Yeah.
And you just know all the lyrics to it. And I don't know how you remember lyrics, because I can't remember any lyrics.
Right.
You know? Good or bad. Like, when you say, like, if you can't remember the lyrics, they're probably bad.
Yeah.
I can guarantee you that the only lyrics I know are of my musical. Other than that, they're all bad. Like, they must all be terrible.
Right.
Because I just can't. I couldn't sing you, like, Dangerous Woman lyrics for the life of me. Maybe the chorus. But anyway, if you were to do Little Red Corvette, how would you do it, like, in your style?
Like, how would I sing it?
Yeah.
Man, I'm not about to play my, you know, I feel like there's some, like, secrets to songwriting that you keep in the studio. Like, yo, you heard me sing my heart out, and so has...
I've also heard you rap. I mean, like, the best collaboration that I've done in the last probably 5 years is when you and I did the demo of Double Vision, which later got cut, but... The version that we had, that was the original demo, that was the best version of it.
Yeah.
And it had you as, like, the feature, and we were all like, man, how do we release this? Like,
yeah.
This shit's fire with you doing the rap. And no one ever beat that rap.
Yeah, no.
I don't even remember what featured on it.
I think it was Tyga, actually. But he didn't, like, do my rap. He did his own rap. I thought mine was better, but whatever.
Right. So you go to Miami, and at this point you're like, I give up on the rapping.
Yeah, I mean, I had kind of given up on
the
rapping.
Why did you move to Miami?
I didn't really plan on moving there. I was probably just going to join the military like everyone else where I'm from. It's like, you know, you grow up in Virginia Beach. It's like you work at the shipyard, you join the military, you work at a bar, or you do something worse, you know. But I actually had a friend that I grew up with whose parents started a pretty successful clothing business down there. And to make a long story short, I was down there hanging with him. He kind of talked me into coming. I met a random dude in the mall who ended up being Kevin Rudolph, who kind of like had known my friend, and he didn't really have a lot going on. He had, like, you know, he had done session work for Timberland as a guitar player and a bunch of things. Ended up going back to his place because he wanted to show me his studio, and we played each other's music, and he didn't like mine and I didn't really like his, and we kind of had a good laugh. And
did you guys both say that?
yeah, I mean, I
or
think.
Or were you both like, yeah, this is real?
I think it was that. I think it was like, oh, cool, man. And he was like, yeah, totally. You know, but it was like, it was clearly like, you know, I was doing like, you know, fake gangster rap, and he was doing some form of complaint rock or something that, you know. you know, but it was crazy because he's like a really great singer and producer, and I had never even been into a studio that A, didn't have, you know.
Had he already had a hit or anything yet?
I mean, he had had like a solo deal previously as like an artist named Binocular, you know, or something. He was signed to Maverick at one point. And then that, I don't know what happened with that, but then he was kind of just like producing for things and doing guitar. He had played like guitar on Say It Right for Nelly Furtado and done a bunch
of cool
stuff.
It's just so unusual for like anybody in Miami to enter the pop world at all.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, Kevin's like a smart Jewish boy from New York, you know, as many Jews end up in Miami from New York. We complimented each other in the place where each other lacked, where he was pretty much could do everything. I think maybe just wasn't so interested in writing lyrics, you know, because he writes great lyrics too. And that was really, you know, he opened my mind up to pop music because he would be like, oh man, why don't you just write words to these melodies? And I was like, what? Like, and he would like sing like a, na, 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 and I'm like, put words to that. And I'm like, what? Like, I had no idea what he was talking about.
Sure.
I hadn't even never been in a studio where there was a guitar in it before.
Right.
I like, it's like MPC, sock over the mic, speakers, 400 people.
Yeah.
You know, that was like the studios that I am used to.
Right.
You know?
That's crazy. So when Good Girls Go Bad happens.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, that's what it means.
Yeah, totally.
You know, like, I mean, we've talked about how that's, you know, licensing wise, that's probably the biggest album or biggest song you've had.
Yeah.
I mean, not, well, now you've had like five, but that's one of them. I mean,
yeah, I mean, that song was really good to me. And you know what's fucking funny, man? Gabe, the singer, is my next door neighbor now. And he's such a good dude. You know, it's like, that's the first like writing trip I took to LA.
Yeah.
I went in the studio with him. It was Mike Caron, who's now like one of the heads on the Mount Rushmore of the music business and also a good friend. He was an A&R, just an A&R at Atlantic at the time, like developing Bruno, like showing me Bruno before he blew up and like doing all these things. And he actually put me and Kevin in.
Dude, he's why we met.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, like I'm pretty sure we've talked about that, but I was in a random room and he was like, hey, do you want to come in this other room? He was kind of like testing me out because he knew my band or whatever. And it was an Asher Roth. You were in with Asher Roth.
Yeah.
And
I didn't want to work with Asher Roth, man. I was so heated. Like, you know, just the bitter, failed white rapper having to go in with another.
Oh, yeah.
With like, you know, a white rapper who's having a big moment. Like, to be completely honest, I still get bitter about it sometimes.
Really?
I mean, I swallow it quickly. I don't like harp on it anymore, but it's always like, it's like, imagine if you have a mosquito bite that just like itches once a year for 2 seconds.
You don't think you could do, I mean, we joked about the idea of doing like, you know, go to your producer friends and having them spend 10 minutes on a beat.
Have the best producers in the world make the worst beats ever and me just rap on them.
Yeah, I mean, is there some part of you that would go and just,
you
I mean,
know what?
Just for fun even.
Nah, you know what? I think your dreams and your blessings come in disguise sometimes, you know, because even after the failed rapper thing and doing, you know, I went on tour with Kevin and it was this hype man, you know, and I was like, I was kind of just jumping around on stage and throwing up and being ridiculous. And I had a lot of fun. Then I came back and I put like kind of a band together called the Fuck Ups. And we had to change the name to the Fush Ups. And Phil, who's a producer signed to me now, who's crushing, was the singer of the band. And I was the rapper. And I have songs with 3-6 Mafia and Mac Main and all these weird, you know, all these fucking random people, and I was having Kevin produce it, and then I end up not doing a deal for that because I wanted to write songs. And then after I had a couple more hits, I went back, and you know, I was on a lot of drugs and I was really high, and I hyped myself back up to be an artist again. So I shot a couple videos for these kind of for these kind of songs and put them out. And then I saw them kind of like start to like look like people kind of cared, and a couple labels called me. And then at that point, that was probably like 5-6 years ago, you know, and I shut it down and I've never looked back since. And I don't want to be an artist anymore, you know.
Wow.
I like the
so that was going on when we first met.
Yeah, I just kind of never really
is
talked
that shit
about
on
it.
YouTube.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I have like horrible rap videos of me like taking bong hits and hawking loogies and just being like, you know, I always feel like I was very ahead of the trends though. Like if you look back, like even though I was clearly whack, there's people that do it way better than me. Like I kind of feel like I was like onto something that like every time I would get onto something, like it wasn't cool. And then later it would be cool. But the person who made it cool was like better looking, sounded better, had better songs. So I'm not I'm not saying like anybody jacked my shit, but I felt like I was just kind of like a little, I mean, saying I was ahead of my time is whack, but I was just never on the current.
Well,
cusp.
I mean, obviously you were though. I mean, you could probably argue that with a good portion of the people who are working songwriters, that they were, when they were artists, they were a little bit of the head of their time. It's probably why it didn't work and why when they moved over to being able to write with artists that had a name, but they were like the vehicle for the same songs. Like your songs were still probably dope, and now it's just easier to use like those, that cadence with Maroon 5
totally.
Or something now. Like,
I mean, my memory log of the millions of rap songs of other people that I have memorized and listening to it my whole life is how I'm calibrated to write songs. I've developed a sense of melody.
Did you ever read lyrics, or is that all from hearing?
I want to
explain, and it's impossible to do what it's like to be in a studio with you and your ability to, like I said in the intro, but you can't explain it because there's really aren't, I can't think of anybody else I can point to, but like your ability to say really complex concepts so simply and then have a flow to it.
Right.
It's so much harder than people think.
Yeah, it's hard, but
it takes me months of editing to get to what seemingly takes you like 15 minutes.
Right. And I also see like somebody like you or someone else pick up a guitar, play like a really cool, you know, lick chord progression with like a built-in melody over it that already sounds like a hit, that I feel like is the most important. Like I'm like, I can never do that my whole life.
Yeah.
You know? And then y'all think what I do is hard, but I think that's why it's good that we're both here.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
because,
right.
And that's the other thing too. Like I can hear a melody over chords, and the words are just like, that's what my brain does. Like, what does this sound like to me?
Yeah.
What, like, I hear a built-in concept and a lyric to just a mumble because it's a feeling. It's like, what does it feel like? Like, if I hear like
but
a
where
really,
does that come from? That comes from liking music?
Yeah.
Or is that?
Yeah, I think it just comes from my imagination. Like, that's the one thing that I really am proud of is my imagination to be able to imagine what it would be like. I hear a song and I just imagine what the lyrics are, and that's what comes out of my mouth. I'm not thinking of lyrics. I'm not on a rhyme zone, you know?
Right.
I don't even care if the rhymes are dope. I just care if it feels awesome.
Right.
You know, it's not even like, oh, did I have the coolest song title? Like, I mean, I've had like, look at all my songs. I've never like Amar, who's a genius. The way Amar Malik writes, so much different than me. We collaborate together, but he has songs like Payphone and Stereo Hearts. Like, I don't have songs with titles like that.
Right.
Because it's just, that's not the way my conceptual brain works.
Right.
He's like a genius poet when he writes. I'm like a rapper who writes pop songs. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I don't think of lyrics the same as everyone else. And I admire and even sometimes envy some of those songs. You know, and those people come to me and are like, damn, how'd you write that? And
well, I'm the like, conversational part is the thing that's, you know, it's really, I was with an artist who is saying, this line needs to sound like it was on a bumper sticker. Because I don't know what it is yet, but it needs to sound like it's on a bumper sticker.
Yeah.
And that's when you get that line of, you know, that sort of payphone-ish kind of like, that kind of lyric is when you're aiming for something different. But when you write your songs, they tend to be, you know, songs that I actually can have, like, I feel like you're talking to me. You know. Is that something that when you're in with these artists like Adam Levine, are you presenting that as, like, the concept? You're like, yo, it's way cooler to have conversational lyrics, because in his past, he had these other kind of songs. Like, How do you have that relationship with him?
Yeah, I mean, we have a really good relationship. But if you also listen through his catalog, I mean, those guys been around so long. And the thing about Adam is so great, like me being able to write songs, you know, really for him and with his guidance. And, you know, it really comes from conversations that we have, too.
Right.
So even if I'm like a lot of the songs, I'm like finishing to a certain extent, and then he's coming in and adding his thing. It's like the guy's written fucking bigger songs than all of us.
Yeah.
There's no, it's not like he's not capable.
Right.
You know what I mean? He's more than capable. He's one of the songwriters I look up to.
Sure.
You know, I mean, Maroon 5 wasn't like my favorite band.
Yeah.
You know, I liked the shit, you know,
yeah.
It was cool. But, you know, you listen to the lyrics and the songs that that guy wrote.
Yeah.
Out of control, you know?
Massive.
So a lot of it, it's like I really don't feel like I have to sell myself. It's like I thankfully I did at the beginning. A lot of people were really taken by me. Like my own manager would hit me up and be like, I don't know how to tell people about you. Like,
why?
What do I say you do? Like, he's said to me, like, he said to certain people, like, oh, he's an idea guy. So what Benny jokes me about to this day, I see Benny. He's like, you're an idea guy. You know?
Yeah.
And maybe that's what I am.
Where is that confidence from as far as, oh, now, like, because I guess then it was sort of a lack of confidence, but now it feels like if there's a room of 10 people and you're like, that's not a hit, we all move on. And if you're like, that's a hit, we're all like, all right. And we move forward. I mean, why do you feel like, or how do you feel like a song's a hit? I mean, we finished a couple songs in the last 2 weeks. Both that were pretty confident.
Yeah.
You know? But it gives me more confidence. And,
totally.
You know, when you're like, yo, this is a really good record. And and I believe that they're really good too.
Right.
But
because I think my lack of ability for musical detail, musicality, music theory, note to chord ratio, all these things that musical people think about, I don't think about. So it's like there's this, like, if you can imagine it as like a ladder, right? And on the bottom of the ladder, the bottom of the ladder is the lyrics, right? I'm on it, right?
Yeah.
And then there's all these steps, and then the top is the finished song. I'm not worried about any of that shit in the middle.
Right.
So maybe that gives me a little bit of a leg up sometimes to recognize things. Because I'm not, it's almost like a poison. Like, I know people like you, Charlie Puth. Like, I can rattle off a bunch of names of just musical people that just have, it's just in them. I don't have any of that shit.
Yeah.
You know, and I can't do it without those people. But I can hear something that talks to me.
Yeah.
Melodically or musically. You know, and I'm not always right either. I happen to get right sometimes.
When have you been most right? Like, when was there a song where you're like, this is a smash? And it was like, oh yeah, that was a smash.
I really feel like I'm like always right.
Yeah.
With pop music. I mean, but I don't listen to every song.
No, I'm talking about your own.
I've called every one of my songs.
Have you ever missed one?
No.
Fucking crazy.
No.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I mean, fortunately, I feel like it's like in the songwriting world, it's hard to explain to people that, you know, if you're getting a song on an album,
mm-hmm.
it's probably because the 8 songs that the artist wrote before, none of them were hits
mm-hmm.
because they're busy touring. They're doing other things. They're not really songwriters.
Yeah.
And then those last 3 slots are really fought over amongst the community of sort of hit writers.
Yeah.
And if you get a song on an album, you probably have a pretty decent shot that it might be a single. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's so hard for it to get to that stage.
Yeah. You know? I mean, and the thing is for me is the word hit is so bizarre because, like, we don't know what a hit is. There's no, like, golden bullet, you know, that just comes out and is guaranteed to be a hit. I always feel like with my own songs, I can tell because all the songs that I've thought were going to be hits that were hits that I was right about, I felt like that when I left the studio.
Yeah.
The songs of mine that might have fell short, I felt were great, but I didn't feel the hit feel.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, not that I'm like fucking Yoda or something, but I do believe that you can feel like when you've been in the room when a big hit's been written, you know what that day feels like. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
You know what that boner is.
Right. No, it's for real.
If you leave with the half chub, you're gonna half chart. You know what I'm saying?
I guess there have been songs that have made albums where I was like, this song's a hit, and they never went with it as a single.
Yeah.
And those are the ones that break my heart.
Yeah, me too. I mean, you know, sometimes I think that labels and artists and different people make wrong decisions, but that at that point, that's just an opinion-based thing, and that's just something that it's like a passing thought where I'm just like, oh, I wouldn't have done that. Yeah. But it's not really my place.
Sure.
You know, I mean, even with like, you know, like if I'm executive producing Maroon 5 right now, which was the most amazing thing.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the first conversations I had with Jordan, who's the manager, Jordan Feldstein, the manager of Maroon 5, and he didn't say this to me. I said this to him. I was like, look, man, I'm not here to pick or to pick singles. I don't want to pick singles. Yeah. You know, I don't want to campaign for singles either. I'm just going to deliver you the very best stuff I can deliver.
Yeah.
Whether it's something that I wrote, whether it's something that came in from an outside, like as an executive producer, you have to be able to take off your hat as a songwriter. Of course, every songwriter wants every one of their songs to come out and go number one, but I'm taking on a different responsibility right now.
It raises the bar too. I think like when I know what kind of songs you write when I'm not in the room, and I know what kind of songs, you know, I understand what songs my fellow co-writers are writing.
Yeah.
And that's where it's like, okay, well, I need to write something as good or better than they can in order for me to compete.
Totally.
You know, and so it's nice, you know,
way.
It's not a matter of, it's what you're saying about it. It's not about telling the person, you know, telling Jordan that you're going to deliver the hits.
Yeah.
But if you're not the one who's writing it, you're going to have to find one that where somebody's going to compete at that level.
Totally. I mean, look, you know, when I did a song for Flo Rida called Once in a Lifetime that I was sure nothing was going to beat.
Yeah.
You know, Max worked on it. Me and Ricard and Ammo did it. Got Flo on it. We just had this whole thing. I think Luke worked on it, you know.
Yeah.
It just seemed like, oh my God, like everyone worked on it. And I was just like, there's a song to beat. And I remember somebody who was like, oh, there's another song called My House that, you know, called that Ross and Johan did that they think's pretty good. But, I don't totally get the song. And I was like, okay, cool. And then I heard My House and I was fucking heated. Because I didn't write it because I loved it. And B, because I knew my song was never going to see the light of day because of that song. And I think that's where perspective comes in. Like, you have to have that perspective.
Yeah.
You have to be okay with somebody smashing you.
Yeah.
Because if you're not, then you suck.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like you have to be, A, your own worst critic. You have to be happy for other people's success.
Yes.
You can be a mild hater. We all are.
No, my favorite text you've ever sent me was after Dangerous Woman came out and you're like, I hate you. I love you so much and I can't stand you. You're the best.
Yeah.
Was like something like that.
But that's
like
how
that.
I feel. You know?
It's true.
Yeah.
The envy is real.
Yeah.
I think the hard part, you know.
Yeah. That's another album that I sent in one of my favorite songs that I ever made that I was sure was going to be a single.
It's a great record.
It's a great record. Yeah. But when I heard Dangerous Woman, I was like, of course mine's not. You just have to be okay with that. And it's even better when it's your friends.
Yeah.
You know, because you got to be happy for everybody if you want to compete at the highest level. You know, it's like it's sportsmanship.
But that's what you and I have started, you know, why we started making music together.
Totally.
And why we're like signing people and doing our own projects.
Yeah.
Because I think we're both there like, well, we should probably do some more shit together if we like each other's music, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the fucking guy, Joe London, who's sitting here with headphones on, he probably should be in this interview over me, is nominated for a Grammy for Country Song of the Year for Die a Happy Man, which is another song that I was fucking heaving when I heard.
Yeah.
Because I have a song on the Tommy's record that he actually pulled me in on that he did that I didn't write the song, but Lunch Money had a verse on it. And I helped like Lunch write the verse. And I was like, you know, and your overconfident, overbearing mind of, you know, complex mind of being a songwriter, you're like, oh, Thomas Rhett's not going to have another song like this. This is like some funky shit. This is definitely going to be his single.
Right.
And it'll be the best song. And of course, you know, of course I just happen to be a part of that. That's, you know, life just throws me lemons and I make lemonade. And then I heard Die a Happy Man. I'm like, fuck, man.
Yeah.
Fuck you and Sean Douglas. And I love both of these. Yeah, exactly. And I love both these guys very dearly.
No doubt.
And I've had a big hit with Sean with Wiggle. Yeah. So it's like it all it's all just like, what the fuck is all this? It's just about making stuff that you care about, you're passionate about, and sometimes shit is better than others. You know?
I mean, one of the things that I really like with you having artists signed to you from Lunch and Christian and whatnot, you know, it's like you have this a chance to kind of lead the way for them. Like, I think you have a paternal side to you.
Yeah, totally.
You know, that's really kind of fun to watch because I think you have so many writers that are now signed to you.
No, I wouldn't say so many.
No. The percentage of writers that are signed to you that are successful.
Yeah,
100%. Is like 100%.
Yeah, but it's
that's what it is. It's not like a quantity thing. It's
totally.
The fact that they each have had a level of success that shows that you haven't been a passive participant in them.
Totally.
You know?
I mean, that's why I never want to sign a lot of people ever.
Right.
If I get to the point where I'm signing more people than I can handle directly, then I'm going to have a partner who is a badass, who can make up for some of that, and that we can interface. I never want to leave anybody hanging.
Where does your business mind come from?
Probably my father.
Was he always like, he was always sort of running a show, I guess, when you're doing the radio?
Yeah, I mean, my dad's just really smart, and he, you know, he's always been, I mean, I even can remember as far as like negotiating grass cutting money from my dad, and it just wasn't easy.
Why?
And maybe that's because he's Jewish.
Well, yeah, exactly. What do you mean?
Well, you know, I mean, he just always instilled in me.
No, tell me this. So, like, I mean, how does that
like,
work?
It was literally like, conversations about like, hey, can I get $20 to cut the grass? It's like, well, you can have $10 to cut the grass. Well, why can't I have $20? Because the only time you ask to cut the grass is when you need money. If you cut the grass every week, then it could be $20. And I'm like, what? I don't get it, you know? And then it would come to like, well, I need to go somewhere tonight. Can I get the $10 and I'll cut the grass in the morning? Well, no, you didn't cut the fucking grass, so I'm not giving you the money.
Right.
You know, and it's just like, I don't even know what that means. All it means is like, you know,
good for him.
You know, he just kind of taught me to just, you know, basically just earn what you want.
Do they understand what's going on with you?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, they do. I'm really close with my parents, and my parents are really smart. My mom has a doctorate in education, and my dad's been in the radio business, so he knows some facet of the entertainment world. I mean, my dad strokes checks every month to all the, you know, to pay out for all the people that are getting songs played on his station, like any station does.
Sure.
So he gets it.
I mean, it's just such a crazy thing to be three and a half years ago to not be sober to then, you know, executive producing, where I'm pretty sure if I look on radio chart right now, you have to have at least, I know you have the BB song, which is most added, one of them, and then you have the Maroon 5 song, and
hey,
I know
Violet.
Hey Violet, you've got on the Hot AC and the AC charts, like,
well, no, hey, Violet's
20
pop
of them, because you've got, no, I know, but I'm saying the other charts you have.
Yeah.
Don't Wanna Know is number one today on Hot AC.
Yeah,
did you know that?
And hopefully it goes number one on pop pretty soon.
I'm sure it will. It's pretty impressive, man. So if you were to give advice to a struggling writer, what would you say?
A struggling songwriter?
Yeah, don't.
I mean, that's a really hard question, because I would have to have heard songs from that writer, you know.
The actual song, and not like you know. There's that famous thing about advice you'd give an actor in LA. You tell him to take Fountain.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
It's like something usable like that. Yeah.
My favorite thing is One of my friends always says when somebody says they're an actor, they say, "Oh, what restaurant?"
Yeah,
but exactly. I would, I like sharing and reciprocating advice that's been given to me.
Yeah,
you know, I don't like to be greedy with it. So for struggling songwriters, I would say, you know, just think about two things. Think about the music that you like, and think about is your music as good as that? Now, right. I like Stevie Wonder. My songs aren't as good as Stevie Wonder songs, but maybe they kind of like,
you know, compositionally. Maybe I think
maybe just compositionally they work. Like the verse into the chorus, and it all feels good.
Right.
Like it's glued together as well as any other song in history has been glued together. Like, is your song glued together?
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Can you remember your own song? Do your friends like it, or are they just gassing you up? You know, like, think about, like, be a critic of yourself. Think about, is your songs really good? Like, you should be able to put a song that you made in a playlist of all your favorite songs from big artists, and it should sound natural.
Yeah.
If you're playing it at a party.
Yeah.
Like, maybe it's a song no one's heard before, but someone's like, what the fuck? Is somebody playing their fucking music, you know, their own shit, you know? And the other thing, too, that I would say, is think about if you really want to make music for a living or not.
Yeah.
You know?
Because if you do, you have to structure it.
Well, because if you do, then work comes into it. You know, I'm all for, like, hippies playing drum circles on the beach and, like, people that just want to jam just for the fucking sake of jamming and work a day job. But, like, you know, if you want to, like, live your life and get paid for making music and be part of the music business. Unfortunately, the word business is part of that thing. Then you have to think about what avenues there are to get paid and where you excel. And then you should insert yourself into the avenue where you excel and work hard towards using it to generate money.
Sure.
But I'm a firm believer in, like, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, that's sellout shit. That's this and that's that. Well, it's like, I love music and I love money, you know, but not like I love money like Scrooge McDuck. Like, I love being able to, like, make a living. Like, the gift, being rich to me is, it like, if you have, I was rich ever since I made the first dollar off music. And that's because I could go buy myself a sandwich for something that came out of my brain.
Yeah.
That's the dream.
No doubt.
It's all relative. Whether you have $100 million or whether you can afford an $1,100 a month apartment and a Prius for the rest of your life and do whatever the fuck you want to do every day, if you get to do it making music, you're a fucking filthy rich.
How often do you remind yourself of that?
Every single day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you give that same advice to a successful writer?
Well, yeah.
Like, I always wonder what I, you know.
I mean, some successful writers, I'd be like, yo, you should just chill.
Yeah.
If you're not, like, don't beat yourself up.
No, we know some that
totally.
it's hard to watch because their focus isn't in the art of it, or like that they're not really into the game of it.
Yeah.
They're missing the point.
Yeah, I mean, I would just say don't beat yourself up. I mean, if you're successful at anything, you have a right to take a break. You know, it doesn't discredit you at all in my book. I mean, look at, like, Pharrell. He, like, owned the radio for so long. You know, disappeared. He's popping up fashion things, couple songs here. I mean, maybe not as hot as he once was. And then a few years later, he comes back with Happy and Get Lucky. And
yeah, it's
he's
crazy.
Like, and now all of a sudden, he's Pharrell 2.0.
Yeah,
the bigger Pharrell than he's ever fucking been.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I'm gonna give you a list of people, and you can just tell me what you think.
Cool.
Charlie Puth.
Incredible. One of my best friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me about his process.
Man, he's like, I don't know.
It's so shocking when you're around him because he'll hear your song and he'll be like, yo, this shouldn't be in F sharp and that chord right there. And he's not anywhere near a piano. I mean, he's got perfect pitch and yet he still has, like, the ability to sound not like he's in school.
Yeah, I mean, Charlie just has everything. He has flavor. He's a great singer. He's classical. He can just kind of do it all. He's one of my favorites.
Adam Levine.
Adam Levine, big bro, has given me incredible opportunities, just a pro, really cool dude too.
Yeah.
Consider him a friend, you know? And he's like one of the guys that, like, doesn't seem to be affected by the amount of tremendous success he's had. He's still
it
super
is really
cool.
Strange.
Like I kick it at his house and we play basketball and like chill and like we talk about bullshit. It's
you
like,
forget that he's that big.
Totally.
Because you know, he's still sort of, because he always came in as a real, you know, he wasn't a singer-songwriter because the band was there, but he was always part of the writing community, at least ever since Moves Like Jagger. Like, he really has immersed himself. It's part of the reason why they're so successful over a lot of other bands is that they've embraced the songwriting community.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you have someone like that who three albums later is still part of the songwriting community, it's kind of hard to hard to remember that he's really, well, I guess you can, it's easy to remember he's famous, but he's really, really famous now.
Yeah, because we live in LA, like The Voice, like that reaches a whole audience that we kind of forget even exists.
No doubt.
You know?
Selena Gomez.
Like little sister.
It's our family.
Day one come up, I love her to death. She's very deep and very cool and like, you know, has one of the best tones of anyone, works hard. I couldn't say anything bad about Selena if I really, really thought really hard about one thing.
Yeah.
She's just like, she's the best.
DJ Paul.
The rapper or my dog?
Your dog.
That's my dog.
Dude, that
named
dog
after
is the best.
DJ Paul from 3-6 Mafia. I used to have Juicy J too, but my ex-girlfriend has him.
No way. Because then you worked with Juicy J, right?
And DJ Paul. Those are my homies. I told them both that I named my dogs after them, and I don't think they thought it was funny.
Well, especially because if you see DJ Paul, you're like, it's not the most menacing dog you've ever seen.
Nah, he's a little Pomeranian. They both are, but yeah.
So what's next for you?
Vacation. Like, I'm going to go see my family. I know that's not really the question.
No, but dude, look, man, I haven't heard you say that nobody takes less time off than you.
Yeah.
I mean, you have an incredible work ethic, and I don't work at night, and I don't work weekends if I can't, because I worry I'll burn out.
Yeah.
And I watch you in 3.5 years into your sobriety, you're working more efficiently.
Yeah.
Even if you're working a lot, you're very efficient with it, which means that you're that prolific.
Yeah.
Which is fucking shocking.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't write a
song.
It's
very difficult to keep up with you, by the way.
Well, thanks. But, I don't write a song every day. I just involve myself in the process every day, and I look for inspiration and gems.
Yeah.
And I think that's the gift that we have as songwriters.
Sure.
And it's why we're lucky, because we search for those things, and sometimes they come. And then the skill set is packaging it into a song.
Yeah.
You know, you can't. So I just like, if I'll go through 10 ideas with writers that I really want to work with or whoever it is. It's just, if it doesn't feel awesome, I'm just like, fuck this. I'm not going to sit here and just write it for no fucking reason. It's just, and some people get a little aggro about that. It's just my style.
It takes a minute, because if you're like, this isn't, you know, let's move on.
Yeah.
There are times you're like, I kind of think this song's good. And when I look back, I'm like, I don't know if that song was a hit. Even if it was a good song, and that's the thing, aiming for an album track is, or a fan favorite or whatever, however you want to call it, it's psychologically, it's not even necessarily always rewarding, because you really end up being like, this still should have been the single.
Yeah, look, I've had songs on plenty of albums that weren't the single, and when I heard the singles, I was okay with it.
Yeah.
So they just had the better songs, or the right songs for the right time, and the right reasons.
Do you have do you write at all thinking of charts and how Spotify works versus labels, or like, do you even think about any of that, or is that too much to add in?
It's too much to add in. I mean, you know what it is? I only work at this point, what I'll say I'm spoiled about is I think that I've learned enough to know who I'm going to collaborate really great with. And I look for people who excel in areas that I'm weak in. And I've built enough bridges with those people that they trust me and respect my vision, my opinion, my perspective, which I always say the word perspective because I think that's why it's the most important thing. I think they appreciate that about me, and I appreciate theirs as well, and their musicality and their ability to sing a demo and write melodies and create a musical composition that I can insert, you know, stupid shit I do into it, and we can all challenge each other. Like, I love a challenge, you know? Like, I want somebody to be like, dude, those lyrics fucking suck. Write them again.
Yeah.
I'd rather you just say that flat out to me. Like, and most of the time, to be real, like, I know when something I write's not great. But yeah. I also don't write lyrics for the sake of, like, I don't, like, I'm not trying to be Chris Martin from Coldplay.
Right.
I just want to sound cool. You know, right. I just want it to sound like some shit you would say to somebody.
Right.
That's what gets me going. You right. know? And if there's a metaphor or a flip on a concept or a lyric that just falls into place, brilliant.
Yeah.
That happens sometimes, sick. If not, fuck it.
Yeah. You know, to close I know how much we're working together and how we're starting companies yeah. together. And totally. We're signing people together and we're doing the whole thing. And it's like,
yeah.
The more I hear your thoughts on the planet and the positivity you're putting out there and whatnot, and I know how you're starting to get involved in everything from the songwriting community to having, like, you know, you're going to be a dad
yeah.
and all that stuff. Like, this is, I couldn't have a better business partner to go into some of these things with. So I'm stoked, man.
I feel the same about you, though, you know?
It's one of those things of, like, you know, in the most positive way, if you can't beat them, join them. And it's like, it's nice when you're like, okay, so we do different things, but I love how you approach these things and how we approach the music industry. Like, this is a big place.
Yeah.
It's tiny in numbers, but there are a lot of ways to be creative and you know, developing artists, developing songs, developing, you know, all the different entities. So it's fun because I think you do it really well, and it's fun to watch.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
dude. I appreciate you guys taking the time to listen to me ramble about shit. I hope it comes across as meaningful to someone out there.
Me too.
Thanks for listening to this episode of And the Writer Is. If you want to hear music from this songwriter I just interviewed, be sure to check out our Spotify playlist. Or visit our website at andthewriteris.com. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe to us on iTunes. You can also like us on Facebook and Twitter. And the Writer is produced by Joe London, edited by Miles Bergsma, and published by Big Deal Music. A special thanks to Jeff Sparger, David Silberstein from Mega House Music, and Michael White. Until next time, this is Ross Golan.